ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Welcome to this episode of the Attention Please podcast. My name is Arnab Ray, and I will be your host for today. Before I was going to record this show, a few hours before, I just saw something which blew my mind. A tweet made by an official Indian government account, MyGovIndia, starts off with, "No two persons ever read the same book, Edmund Wilson." And then as part of their reading challenge, they promote The God of Small Things, written by Arundhati Roy. Yes, that made me do a double take. I'm guessing that when they say no two persons ever read the same book, what they essentially mean is that whoever runs this account obviously didn't read the same book as I did. Now, I'm not saying that God of Small Things is a particularly subversive book. It is political, but again, it's a very well-written book, no doubt about it. But the fact that the government of India wants to promote, as an Indian author, somebody who has consistently spoken against the Indian state and this Indian government. When I say Indian state, I'm saying it's not that she's been a Congressee. Of course, I would presume she is more aligned with their viewpoint, but this is a person who has supported violent Naxals, and he's called them Gandhians with guns. So this is a person who is as radical could be in terms of her opposition to the oppressive Hindu majoritarian Indian state. And yet what we find is that an official handle of the government of India is promoting her book. And after this, people call this government intolerant. Now, I'm not saying that this shows fundamentally that this government, quote unquote, is tolerant. This actually happens because our ministries are essentially run by IAS babus, and it's they who are endorsing this. It's they who essentially run things. And for any of you who have seen Yes Minister, Yes Prime Minister, you know exactly what I'm talking about. As Humphrey, the stereotypical bureaucrat there, says that the country is too important for politicians to be running it. That's why, I mean, who elects a politician? Nobody really. Nobody cares enough to elect a politician. They're always elected by a very minuscule minority of the country who cares enough about a politician. You can't leave the job of running a country to like politicians. You need to leave it to people who are educated enough to run the country, which means the bureaucracy. And this is an example of a bureaucracy which obviously the bureaucrat who did this, who's responsible for this, obviously admires Arundhati Roy as an author. And I would presume, since in today's world we are told that by progressives that the work of an author is nothing different than the author herself or himself. So apparently, this government, the BJP government, is absolutely fine with promoting the work of Arundhati Roy. I mean, it just blew my mind. Of course, they deleted the tweet, and I'm sure there is a Babu who's getting who's getting some Kari Ninda going on right now. But this again fundamentally shows why the left liberal progressive ecosystem, even after years, two terms almost of supposedly right-wing government, you could see that the government essentially runs in exactly the same way as it always has. When the right wing comes into power, there is only a sprinkling of change at the top, which is why nothing really changes for the people on the ground. That's why that's really one of the problems with modern democracies, and especially with India, where bureaucrats essentially decide what the policy is. The politicians are never really in charge. And you can see that something like this, again, it's a minor thing. It's mostly a funny thing, and no harm, no foul. But this just goes to show the dissonance between the people who actually run the country and the people who we believe we elected to run the country. Anyways, moving along. So the topic I want to discuss today, and as any of you who have been following this show for, I think, what, 2 or 3 years now know, is that we rarely stick to one topic from episode to episode. So I realize that I haven't been talking a lot about something which, again, I think a lot about and I'm kind of passionate about, which is our relationship with our employment, our jobs. And as a student of philosophy, I feel that there's a lot of work on our relationship with ourselves. Do we exist? Our relationships with God, if a God exists. But there's really little philosophizing that goes on with respect to our relationship with our place of work. And I wonder why that is. And I feel that there's almost a body of work missing in why we like a job, why we don't like a job, when should we leave a job. There's virtually nothing, and I've been looking at this for a while, just as mostly as an intellectual exercise, to understand what people say, what kind of psychologies, what type of people are successful at work, what type of people are not successful at work, and why do some people ascend the stairs and why do some people fall flat on their face? It's not a question of ability. What exactly holds people back? So I've been looking a lot for literature on this, and I'm pretty sure it exists, and I've seen some things, but never really been satisfied with the depth of this kind of analysis. So the topic for today isn't really that. It's much more practical. I check my LinkedIn every day, every morning, and mostly for the gentle joys of LinkedIn status updates. But one of the things that I see almost everywhere are people leaving their jobs. People are calling, I've forgotten what the term is, the great leaving or something, that apparently now that most of the world is returning to normal after COVID, there's an amazing amount of churn in the corporate corridors of the world. People are leaving. People have, after working from home for more than a year, people are reevaluating their life, their choices. And again, there was an earlier episode where I had spent some time talking about, and for those of you who haven't heard it, I'll try to explain it in summary. What I said was that one of the mistakes, perhaps one of the biggest mistakes that we make in our lives, is that we optimize for money when we should really be optimizing for time. Again, this might not sound to be a very original statement, but I don't think I've heard it phrased in this way. So whatever investment strategies you read about in books or on websites, they all talk about how do you optimize the amount of money you have to make more money. But to me, the way I look at it is money is just a secondary attribute to your real asset, which is your time. Because unlike money, which you will likely have still a lot left over when you die, your time, you're going to have zero time left over when you're going to die, which is the definition of death. So in order for us to best utilize the most limited resource that we have, that is time, we have to optimize based on that. So the reason why I say that is, you know, you hear this complaint that, you know, I work all day and night and I'm barely there to enjoy the fruits of my money. And that's basically bad investment, because you are earning money for somebody else, essentially, at this point of time. You are utilizing your actual resource, which is time, to make a secondary resource, which is money, which you do not have the time to spend. So in order for us to be happy, and this is why I greatly admire Buddhist philosophy, is because Buddhism approaches, again, Buddhism doesn't say anything about this, but in terms of how should we be happy? So this is a philosophy which approaches not the problem of our existence, not necessarily from the point of view of, is there God? Are we going to go to God? What is the purpose of our life? But it asks a very simple, though very fundamental question: how can we be happy? So as part of this, where Buddhism is silent is, of course, a relationship to our corporate overlords. Of course, this was not today. So, of course, the Buddha didn't know about this. So there is a question that I want to ask myself often, is that given the life that we live, given the life that we lead and the times that we live in, how do we maximize the value of the time that we have? So one of the ways which we can do it is to ensure that we work in a job that provides us the best value for our time. That is a function of good investment of your time. Now, there's a class of people, kind of life coaches, who say, if you enjoy your work, you will never work a day of your life. Some other crap. But, you know, there are very few people who are fortunate enough to do that. And very few people actually enjoy their work. And somebody who does it is fortunate. But most of the time, if somebody is paying you money to do something, that usually means that you're not supposed to enjoy it. In life, what I have seen is when you are enjoying it, it's usually you who pay the money. So this whole thing of I enjoy what I do and I love coming to my work every day. There could be some days, there could be some tasks that you truly enjoy doing, but it's usually not a lot. And it's usually not everything. Because if it was, then honestly, nobody would be paying you, because that's very much the nature of modern capitalism. They're very efficient at realizing these things. So how do you, given the fact that we are only, all of us, moderately enjoy our work, I wouldn't say that, that's why we want to come home from it. Otherwise, we would be there always working on our own volition. So the first thing is, what should we do about our jobs? Why? And again, we see so many people leaving their jobs. So obviously there is an expectation, they believe that by leaving their job, they're going to be happier. I believe that's an underlying presumption here. And we have almost a global churn. There's a lot of people at the same point of time are coming to this epiphany that they need to change their jobs. Of course, it's one person going from company A to company B, another set of people going from company B back to company A. So it's not as if all of them are consistently taking the exact same decision to go for, you know, certain companies. I mean, it's a churn. It's not that anybody has really figured it out. So the first thing that I always like to tell people, whoever comes to me for advice, which increasingly over the years, a significant number of people actually come to me for advice. They write emails to me. And I really appreciate people asking me questions, you know, asking me for advice. And I always tell them, look, I don't know you. I don't know what your personal circumstances are. And please don't, you know, blame me for ruining your life. I mean, I have I have my daughter for that. She's the person who is going to blame me for ruining her life. But here's what I think, you know, given that this is what you've told me, this is all I can tell you. So one of the things that is our fundamental relationship with work has changed. In our parents' generation, work was, you know, your office was like your marriage. So you worked for your, you know, your place of work was your place of worship. It was like family. You worked for it. And the only reason you lost your job was because you were caught stealing, essentially. Or even sometimes in government jobs, even then you wouldn't lose your job. So this was a relationship for life, and there was no divorce, there was nothing. And anybody who lost their job was seen to be, that was a judgment call on that person. I mean, what kind of a terrible person is he that he lost his job, which was even worse than getting divorced in a way. So how terrible must he or she be that he or she lost their job? So that kind of relationship with our workplace has changed. And if it hasn't changed for you, I would strongly advise that you look at it in a very different way and look at yourself essentially as a, and again, this is something which we have talked about in past episodes, is that you look up yourself no different than a Uber driver or even you work in a gig economy. The fact that you have permanent employment at any place is fiction. You don't. You're a gig worker. The company can get rid of you at any point of time. And this comes to the first point. You should realize that you can get rid of the company also at any point of time. So it's always very, very important for you to always be on the lookout for other opportunities, even if you're satisfied with where you are. It's not like you're cheating on your job. It's not like, you know, a married guy going onto Tinder. It's perfectly okay to scroll through job postings, even if you're perfectly happy where you are. You should not consider that to be a moral failing. It's not cheating on your job. And again, in previous generations, perhaps it would be. But now, in this day and age, it's not. So this is important because the last thing you want is on the day, and I hope it never happens to you, on the day that you are laid off for nothing that you have done, that's a business decision at this point of time, that you don't find yourself emotionally and psychologically in a place where you are, I mean, nobody likes going there and, you know, being asked to leave. But if you haven't thought of this possibility, if you haven't been preparing for this eventuality, it is going to hit you harder than if you were, in any case, always thinking that this could happen. So it's very important to tell yourself that. And one way of telling yourself is always to be on the lookout, always to be agile. As for the famous line from James Bond, where it was Q, not QM, who tells him that there are two things in life, there are two things that I've always taught you, James. One is never let them see you bleed and always have an escape plan. So you should always have an escape plan. And an escape plan always means that you look at other roles, you look at other positions, and just like your company is also strategizing, it's also thinking about reorganizations, it's thinking about optimizations, you have the exact same right to think on those lines. Which brings me to the second point. Should you look for a job? I mean, should you change your job? So why should you leave where you are and go to another place? Now, sometimes it's very obvious. You're having a miserable time at your work. Your boss is bad. The revenues of the company are tanking. So you could be let go at any point of time. And again, given that most places have severance packages, if you think that your company is tanking, you might be doing the company a favor by resigning before they lay you off. Because when they lay you off, they will possibly give you some severance. So keep looking, but wait to be laid off. Sometimes getting laid off, if you've anticipated it and if you've planned for it, is one of the best things that can happen to you, because you get a nice paycheck that you wouldn't if you just went in there and resigned on your own and went to another company. So think about those things. So should you look for a job? So for me, I think the advice that I would give people is, whenever you're at in today's workplace, and again, perhaps my perspective is primarily tech, because that's really the industry that I work in. This might not be true for some other domains, so caveat. The importance is that you always have to be growing in your job. You always have to be learning in your job. And this is not some kind of management speak that I'm unloading here. This is for your own benefit. If you're not growing, if you're not increasing your skills, and if your resume has stagnated, and you find that you are being given the exact kind of tasks that you were being given a year ago or a year or so ago, remember, the company isn't invested in your personal growth. I mean, they may say so, and some companies may be, but that's not really what they come to do business to. They come to do business to make profits. So you, as an employee, have to ensure that you are growing in your role. And if you find that you're not growing in your role, and some people are perfectly fine in not growing in their role, they like to do the exact same thing every day they come to work. But realize that kind of peace is like the peace of a fly stuck in the spider web. It is peaceful in a way. Nobody's kind of coming to eat you right now. But the more you stay there, the more you're getting entangled in the web. And yes, the spider is coming. It's just that when the spider comes, there will be no escape. So stagnation, which might seem to be some kind of, I pretend to work, they pretend to pay me. Heard that before. Guess what? They have their eyes on you already when you feel that that's your relationship with your employer. So be very careful at that point of time. So look at whether you're growing with your role, whether you're getting different kinds of projects, whether you're being challenged, whether you're learning things. And that's why you have to keep on looking for the jobs, because you have to see what other companies are willing to pay for, what kind of skills are sellable. So for instance, take my example. I started off my life as a formal method software engineering. Formal methods is at the kind of software engineering meets discrete maths. But over the years, I realized that there was not a lot of growth in this domain. So I branched off to cybersecurity, since of course, some of the skills that I had acquired obviously served me in good stead, but it was still a pretty significant pivot. And so you should all, and so nobody can make a pivot just like that. Again, when you try to make an abrupt pivot, you're unlikely to get a job based on that pivot. Or you were doing thing A, and now you're totally not going to do thing A, and you're saying that you're going to go do thing B. So me as the hiring manager, I'm going to ask you, well, show me that you're sincere about doing this. This is not just, I'm doing this because A is not working out for me. So whenever I'm going to give you a job, I want to see some examples of accomplishments in your new pivot to B. That's why you have to do your pivot slowly, because you have to ensure at every point of time that when you're pivoting, you're also being paid to do the pivot. So that's why the pivot has to be gentle. And that's why it's even more important to be always, always in the mode, always thinking, where should I build my expertise in? And the only way you will know it is by going and looking at the kind of skills that people are asking for. So this is a conversation which, again, you should have with your manager. In any properly functioning organization, one of the tasks of a people manager is to ensure the professional growth of the people who report to them. It's not just a question of, hey, here's a task, I give you the task. And unfortunately, that sometimes bad managers do that, that they tend to treat the people on their team as essentially no different from a printer. That printer is busy, let's give it to this printer. Printer has a paper jam, hey, can you take that print job? Now, human beings are not like that. So it's important that the tasks that are provided to members of your team, people who you manage, align with what they want to do moving forward. So if there's a misalignment, I'm not saying there's always going to be 100% alignment, then you as a manager are not being effective. And that also, from the other perspective of your employee, you have to see, is your manager in line with how you want to grow your career? So again, once you find that these answers you're getting, you don't like the answers in your current job, that's when you should seriously consider not just kind of being in the market for a job, but actually being a little bit more serious and actually going for interviews at that point of time. Now, there's a lot of other things that you need to consider. You may have started off the job in one function, and you might have been moved to another function, either because you were moved or there was a reorganization. Now, your career growth is dictated a lot by the function that you are currently in. So the closer you are to the business end of the company, that is where the revenue is being generated, the better you are in a company. So if you find yourself very far away from where the money is being made, maybe you're in IT and you are responsible for provisioning of internal network infrastructure or laptops. You are far away from whatever product your company is making at that point of time. So even though you might be making the same amount of salary as somebody who is, let's say, in product development, that person has a much better path in this company than you do. You are at much greater risk of having your job being outsourced, of being shifted to a low-cost center than the other person. So again, when you're evaluating your job, it's not just a question of what are you making or where you are right now. It is what you believe will be happening in 2 years' time. So again, the people who get devastated by layoffs are people who haven't been thinking in this way. And for there are many people for whom getting laid off is the greatest opportunity that they have, which means some they got a severance, they know exactly what they want to do. And so they just bought themselves about 2 months, 3 months worth of paid vacation. So that's the upside of always having this kind of thought process about where next shall I go? What do I need to do next? So what kind of a job? Nest, you go around, you talk to recruiters, maybe you interview in some places, you even get jobs. So then the question is, well, should I take that job or should I stay where I am? I don't think there's any good answer, no silver bullet kind of answer to this question. But there's some things which you should consider. For me, in my experience, the first question that you should ask, and again, this is a question which a lot of us hesitate asking, is when you are working in a place and you have an option of staying on and you're talking to some other recruiter or somebody else is offering a job, have a front-on conversation with how much that role pays. And this, we have been taught that talking about money, especially straight up, is bad practice, that it kind of shows you off as a mercenary. And if there are some companies which judge you based on that, then it's not honestly not a company you want to be working for. This is another very important thing about your mindset. Any interview process, it is not just them evaluating you, it's you evaluating them. Remember, they may be paying you money, but you will be giving them time. That is the greatest asset that any of us have. So you are also evaluating them at that point of time. And the reason why you're asking for money at the very beginning of the conversation, I don't want the exact amount of money, but what kind of ballpark are we talking about? Is because that is the only objective metric you have of the value that the company is attaching to that role. Don't go by what the job description says. And I've learned it the hard way. Don't go by what the job description says. Don't go by promises made by recruiters, very senior. Don't go by that. Don't go by the name of the role, because different companies, it doesn't cost anything to call any role like a vice president or anything. They can say whatever they want at that point of time. So do not go for those. Just go by how much they are willing to pay for the job, because everything else will follow from that. And there are lots of other things. Beware of that. And many, if this thing happens, is, and from a company's perspective, it totally makes sense, which is to kind of do a try before you buy. So they'll say, okay, your salary is going to be this. We are bringing you at a lower level. We want to see you perform at a certain level. And then once you have performed at that level, then we will immediately promote you. That's perfectly fine. I mean, you are kind of ready already for the next level. But we want to see how you are in our company, whether you're a culture fit. So we'll bring you at a lower level. Always be careful of that trap, that bringing you at a lower level. Because first of all, no promise is a promise. Okay. This is all, I mean, you might come in at a lower level and stay at that lower level. Point number one. Point number two, even if you go up a level, even if you are brought in at a lower level, you perform and you go up a level, what's going to happen is that now you haven't really gone up a level. You're exactly the same level where you were. And now when you want to go up an actual level, they're going to come back and tell you, well, you just got promoted. What do you expect? So be very careful and have these conversations upfront. And if you find that you're not satisfied, then walk away. Because again, I'll remind you, it's your time that you're giving them. They're paying you the money, but important, the even more important for you is the time that you will be giving them. And the last thing is, this is, again, I haven't, at least what I have read, I haven't seen people saying it like this, but I personally believe that this is a very good question that you should ask. So let's say you're working at a place and this next company comes and they give you, let's say, 20% more salary than you're currently giving. Let's say that, since I've just said that is the only metric that really counts, let's go by that metric. So should you just go because that company is paying 20%? Let's presume everything else is the same. You don't have to move, nothing else. There's no other reason why. But is a 20% better job, is that an objectively better thing? And this is where a more subtle question needs to be asked. How important, how generic, like, let's say you in your current role, you have a very niche skill and your company needs that niche skill, but your company just can't pay that amount of money. It can't pay you 20% more, but it's not that they don't need you. They would gladly pay 20% more, but they just can't. The other company, on the other hand, might have a lot of cash, might be a very successful company, but they have a lot of people like you. They don't really need your niche skills, maybe. I mean, they knew some of your base skills, but they don't need your niche skills. That's okay. Or they have many people in your niche. So you're not that valuable to them. But yeah, they can pay you 20% more. That's not a problem for them. It's just, you know, one signature by one manager. It's not a big deal for them. So at that point of time, what is it? And I would say you should stay with your company. Even though you're getting 20% less, you are likely to have a better time in that company. You're likely to have a better investment for your time. Remember, your money is the amount of money you get is a secondary attribute. The primary attribute is the time. If you are in a place where your niche skill is valued more and you are one and there's nobody else like you, you are likely to have a much better time in that company. You are likely to be valued. You're likely to be appreciated. You're likely to have more impact versus this other company where you would be paid perhaps more, but you'll basically be fighting out with a lot of people who are very similar to you. You will be, your basic niche skill, that kind of very special thing that you have, isn't that valuable to them. So you're replaceable. So even though they are paying you more money, you are more irreplaceable in the first job, which means you have that job security. You have that, again, for you, you want to have job security. You want to know that, okay, if I leave, I'll leave on my own. It's not that they don't need me anymore. So you are in control. So it's important. And even if there's no question of being let go or anything, the very fact that your niche skill is exactly what your company needs, that itself gives you the kind of leverage which might not translate to more money for you. Accept it. But over on the long run, it will give you a better quality of the time that you have. It is a better investment of your time, which again, as I say, is always. And that's why I harp on this, that we sometimes, and again, I said so, that the only metric for the seniority of the role is the compensation. So it's the secondary attribute. But that's for evaluating the level of it. But once you have, there are other considerations you need to think of. So when I see, in conclusion, when I see this great churn on LinkedIn, I wonder to myself, how many of these people have even thought through these things? How many of these people are just thinking, oh, there's another company which is giving me exactly the same amount of money, but they will allow me to work from home. And I've really liked working from home. I'm definitely getting some time back by working from home. So I'm going to go with this other company. But are they thinking along these lines? Are they thinking about what kind of skills they have cultivated, how much that other company needs them, whether they're, but, and this again becomes very, very important the more senior you get. So the more senior you get, the more niche you become. So this may not be a big thing for like a person who's like 30 years old, 5 years of experience, you know, they can kind of go anywhere. But if you're 10, 15 year old, like mid-career professional, these things are very important. So the most important thing I would say, and again, this is not something which I realized years ago. This is something which I've kind of come to understand, the very important factor that this is, that whether you are a good fit for the role, whether you bring in a set of skills which is absolutely perfect for that role and which the company cannot get in the market that easily. That is what gives you a really good time in a company. That's what gives you recognition. That's what gives you impact. Because again, for a company, when they're evaluating people, they don't evaluate people based on how smart they are. We like to think so. In growing up middle class, we always think that our worth is measured by our smartness and our effort and our labor and the amount of money we put in and amount of time we put into our job. And none of it is true. The amount of what we get out from a company is the value that we bring to the company. So while company B might be paying me 20% more because they just can afford to, salaries are just higher there, doesn't mean that I bring greater value to them. I might be much less valuable to them than I'm in my current place, which means I should better stay in my current place, even at the cost of that bump that I would immediately get. So again, thanks a lot for listening. And once again, I have a Patreon page. For those of you who like the podcast, would like to support it, please consider becoming a monthly Patreon. That will enable us to continue this podcast. And take care and have a nice week. Bye-bye.